This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word, including the newest member, Mr. Rajesh Madok. Thank you, Raj. I appreciate you joining and for your sponsorship and patronage. I'm glad that you appreciate listening to The Magic Word enough to give us your financial support. For any of the rest of you who would like to assist, we certainly could use it, and we appreciate it, regardless of how small or large that the donation might be, if it's a one-time donation or an ongoing monthly pledge. It's something that is easy for you to do, and consider it to be like buying me a cup of coffee each month, or perhaps a nice single malt scotch or something like that. Anyhow, anything would be appreciated. And again, the Friends of the Magic Word are valuable to us in order to help keep this free for everyone on the internet. It pays for our monthly fees and our microphone and all the rest of the paraphernalia and things that we need in order to keep this going. So thanks a lot, guys. Many of the podcasts that are in the archives have been conversations with friends, some of whom that the listeners have told me later they didn't know but felt like that they had learned a lot from them. I think that this might be another one who is a person who is not as well known within the magic community. He certainly is within a certain area and has a lot of big friends and important, celebrated, well-known magician friends that he has worked with and has known for a very long time. And I know that you're going to learn a lot from David Girard here in this podcast this week. David's from Louisville, Kentucky, and David and I have known each other for a number of years, but really never had the opportunity to sit down to chat until he happened to be coming through Houston as part of a lecture tour here recently. And we were talking about the lecture that he had just given, which was fantastic, and I highly recommend, by the way. And then also we started getting into some of the information I think that's important that magicians know about. I mean, it's not just the tricks, obviously, but it has to do with marketing and presentation and creating and things like that. But also, kind of as a follow-up to this past or last week's podcast that we had with Orson Bean and with Allie Mills, there were some tremendous stories, a lot of really cool things about old Hollywood and television and things like that that Orson had shared with us. And along that line, there were some stories that David Girard shares with us here this week that I had not heard about. I don't want to tip too much, but there are some kind of cool things in here. So he's got some good stories as well. And it's very interesting, things he talks about having to do with Penn and Teller and Doug Henning and others, and so be sure to listen for those. He also is the author of a book, I should say actually is the subject of a book that was written by someone else, but it was called Out of My Hat, The Magic of David Girard. The book itself is a little over 200 pages. It's in hardbound as well as paperback, and it is a complete set of his lecture notes that he sells at his lecture. And by the way, going back to his lecture, I have to say it's one of the better ones that I've seen in a long time, because it's not just cards, not just mentalism. In fact, I think there was only one card trick that he taught during the lecture, and the rest of them were some really cool tricks having to do with stage and stand-up, things that can be done for children or for adults as well. And so, I mean, they would apply towards children or adults, depending upon your presentation. A well-rounded lecture and some other things about some hand exercise to keep you from getting arthritis and different things like that. Anyhow, a well-rounded and diverse lecture that I really enjoyed and recommend if you ever have an opportunity to have him lecture in or around your location. That's why I call David the ace of all trades, not just the jack of all trades, but he's better than that. He's the ace of all trades. I say that because, goodness, he does a lot of children's shows. He does gospel magic. He does stage shows. He does trade shows. He works state fairs, does strolling, close-up, walk-around. He is creative. Although he doesn't build illusions, he does big illusions. He knows the workings of them and how to choreograph. He understands lighting and staging and everything from the intricate micro magic up to major illusions. He's been on Penn and Teller Fool Us. He's been done some other television shows and worked a lot of different places in and around his area. He really doesn't travel a lot out of the Louisville area because of his full-time job there as a youth pastor at a church there in Louisville. So he kind of is, again, well-known in his little pond, I guess, out there. But after this podcast, you'll get to know him a lot better yourself here, and why that I was so excited about having him, because he is really a wealth of knowledge, regardless of what subject that you would like to discuss. Anyhow, the book itself is called Out of My Hat, and he has offered a copy of this book to one lucky listener, so you can enter a contest here this week to possibly win a copy. And we'll give you more information on how to enter the contest at the end of this podcast. So, again, there are a lot of things I know that you will enjoy and you will learn from somebody who will be your new best friend also after you've had a chance to listen and learn from him. I know you'll get a lot out of it, so please welcome my guest this week, Mr. David Girard, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. And today we've got an interesting guest. This is going to be another lecturer who has come through Houston here recently, Mr. David Girard, and he is from Louisville, Kentucky. And I had the opportunity for him to go on a lecture tour across the U.S., kind of different places along the way, and might be doing something again next year as well. But he is someone I've been looking forward to having on a tour, and things worked out such that he can do it now and happen to be, again, coming through Houston. And we had met earlier in Louisville personally, but we've been kind of having a conversation, a correspondence, an email back and forth for a while. So with that, I just want to welcome my guest, Mr. David Girard. Hello, David.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. And we actually, I got to know you when I was president of the Louisville Magic Club, because you were one of my contacts
right.
for scheduling lectures for our club.
Right.
And so that's how I kind of knew who you were.
Well, there were some people, I think Mike Woodward also.
Mike Woodward from Lexington was actually here tonight,
yes.
And it really freaked me out. This guy walked in. I thought, that looks a lot like my friend Mike Woodward. And then I went, that is Mike Woodward. What are you doing here?
And he's the president of the Lexington.
That's right. And been a good friend for a long time. We've performed together on many occasions.
Yeah. Now, when you're performing with him, I mean, I do with Jamie Salinas and some of the other guys, and do you do strolling, you do stage, or when you're working with these guys, are they doing one thing and you're doing something else? Or when you...
Mike has typically been a part of an annual show that our club does, a fundraiser for our magic club in Louisville mm-hmm. called It's Magic, and I've been the producer of that show for probably the last 7 or 8 years, and so I put the show together, and it's a stage show.
Okay.
And so
it's open to the public, obviously.
Right,
it's
open to the public. It's a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And so as a producer of that show, I'm trying to make sure we have our best foot forward, but I'm also trying to give a lot of performers within the club the opportunity to do something.
Right.
So Mike's a pro. And so I can bring Mike on, and I know, okay, I got a solid, whatever, it doesn't matter what he does, it's going to be professional, it's going to look
right.
great.
Right.
And then I can surround him, I can fill in with other, you know, great people, but maybe less polished performers.
Mm-hmm.
And
you always got somebody who's
that's right. I know I've got two or three
on,
folks that can, they're going to, you know, maybe carry the show in case, so people feel like they got their money's worth.
Sure.
But in the last couple of years, as I've tried to involve more club members, we came up with a format called Hit Me With Your Best Shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ask members, I say, I want one trick. I want your best trick.
For the banquet.
For the It's Magic, right.
Okay.
For the public show. And so then I'll have a headliner or one or two people, you know, I'll perform, somebody like Mike maybe, and then I'll pop in other members of our club doing, you know, three minutes, four minutes, 5 minutes, their best trick.
Now, how many people would that take? I mean, like 20 people or
something? No, this year I think we had 8 performers.
That's still a lot.
It's a lot. Mm-hmm. But again, most everybody's only taking 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of, put, you know, it's a two-part show, intermission.
It's now, on your banquet, I mean, I know a lot of other magic clubs like we do in here in Houston as well have public shows, and it's a fundraiser, and it's not really a fundraiser. Ours end up being a break-even thing. We just want to make sure we're not going to lose any money.
Right.
It's really an installation of officers.
Right.
And so, again, people who are listening to this that have their own banquets for their clubs and everything, this might be kind of a template to follow. Now, in yours, we have dinner that is included with that.
Right.
So this way, that when people are coming in, we try to keep the installation of officers portion of the meeting, if you will, the business part, you know, very short,
15 minutes maybe at the most. But we'll have close-up strolling, and then we'll have dinner, and then we'll have a little bit of installation of officers, and then we'll have an hour-and-a-half show.
Right.
And everyone's home by 9 o'clock because we start like at 4:30. Now, do you have dinner?
Ours is not really a banquet. We have a Christmas banquet or a holiday banquet in December.
But that's just for magicians.
That's just for, you know, anybody can come. But it's a show, nice dinner, and a nice show. And usually we just bring in one or two performers, sometimes from the outside. And, you know, it's a ticketed event. It's Magic is a straight show. The doors open at 6. The show starts at 7. We have performers strolling in the lobby and around the theater doing close-up. Curtain goes at 7, and we try to be finished by 9.
So when you're saying, actually, the curtain goes up, it sounds like you have a legitimate theater.
We have a wonderful theater.
See, ours is just kind of a
dance
hall.
This is a wonderful theater. It's Ursuline Arts Center.
Wow.
On the campus of Sacred Heart there in Louisville. It's a 507-seat theater, which is perfect for us.
Yeah.
And they have a full set of flies, and the technical director is real easy to work with. And it's just a great there's
so they've got a staff that you're working with. So do you pay them X dollars, which
we
includes
pay
all
them,
the
and it's affordable. And, that's the other thing, because really we're only working with one person, and we've worked with Jerry Keene, the technical director there for years, and Jerry works with us on any kind of special cues. Like this year, I used a video opening.
Yeah.
Well, I'd already talked to Jerry. We'd gone over there, and you know, and so when I got there, he's already kind of knows what's going to happen, and he doesn't charge us an arm and a leg for his services.
Yeah.
But he pretty much calls the shots. And so we've been there a bunch of times, and he knows us, we know him. And so that theater becomes our home for that afternoon. And there's not much, I don't have anything in my repertoire that you can, I mean, I've done Azra in that theater. It's got everything.
Now, I was going to ask you about the theater. Obviously, it's available for the public to rent.
Right.
Have you ever rented that, like, for your own personal show and then tried to sell tickets?
No, I never have. I've shot some video stuff in there.
Okay.
And again, Jerry's pretty good about, hey, can I come over and can you turn on the lights? And I might need a little help here and there. But I've always thought that might be a place at some point down the road I might try to do that.
Have you ever had like a one-man show that you've done or anything like that?
Never have done anything like that, except for years ago I was working on a video project, and I rented a theater and planned that show very carefully and had video crew there to video and wanted to pack it out so it was free. I mean, anybody could come.
But the most part of what you're doing then are really, well, I know we're going to talk about state fairs here in a minute, but there are outdoor types of things that you work?
I don't like outdoors. I'll do outdoors, but I'm getting too old for outdoors.
Yeah, as I get older, it's,
But I, you know, I go where I'm invited. And so...
But where do you promote yourself? I mean, I
promote myself. I try to have a strong online presence with a website and Facebook and those types of things. I'm very diligent about following up with people. Like if I meet somebody, like today, as I was on this trip, I've been to Lake Charles. Well, today and last night in Lake Charles, I made a couple of phone calls to some people that I know
locally
in the Lake Charles area.
Well, okay.
And in Louisiana, and then today I've contacted a couple of people in the Houston area. Tomorrow I'll be connecting with some people. You know, here I come. I'm going to be around. How you doing? Just keeping my name in front of them. And then trying to get people to recommend you. Word of mouth is the best.
So these are people that you have met before, and you're just kind of following up. Say I'm in town. Let's get together for breakfast, or you try to.
These are people that have used me,
okay,
or that I've worked with. They might used to live in Louisville. Different ways in which our paths
but you've
have
maintained
crossed.
Contact.
And I've maintained contact. And so, like for example, next month in October, when I go to Knoxville, I think the Knoxville lecture is on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
Well, I do a lot of church stuff, and Wednesday night's a good church night, as is Friday night for church stuff. So I will contact my friends in that area and say, I'm already going to be there.
Yeah.
Could you use me on Wednesday or Friday?
Okay.
And I've not found a magic bullet yet for marketing, but I believe the personal touch is important.
True.
I write a lot of personal letters still.
Yeah.
And
not just emails.
Not just emails.
About,
I do the emails.
The stamp and the letter.
That's right. And if I go somewhere, you're going to get a personal. It's a bit of a form letter, but it's personalized. It's on my letterhead. It's signed. It's a personal thank you for having me. And I think, and then if I meet somebody, I'm always looking. I've got a business card that I'll hand out, but I want their card. I'm glad to give you mine, but I want yours. Because then I control it.
Do you ask for their card before you give them yours, or you exchange it?
If we get a conversation going, I'll say, do you have a card? Do you happen to have a card or a way that I can contact you? I'd like to send you some information.
Right.
and then that goes into my database.
Because I've heard people say before, I don't carry a business card intentionally to say, can I have your card, and I will send you my information.
Right.
So that way that there's a reason for you to get back in touch with
them. That's right. And you just trust them. If I can get your because I have no guarantee that if I give you my card, I'm ever going to hear from you again. So
that's
I
right.
try to make sure I know who you are, where you are. Sometimes I can find that on the internet myself if I know where you work, you know, and that type of thing.
But what do you do if they don't have a card, which has happened with me a lot of times, saying, well, I just ran out of cards? Or
what I try to do is I just try to make sure I've got the name mm-hmm. and where they work mm-hmm. and some kind of point of connection so I can find them.
Do you jot that down then in the back of your card?
I write
right
it down
then?
As quick as I can.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when I get back to the room but most of the time people are pretty good about if you've got that kind of conversation going, they're interested in what you're doing.
You know what I've done, like at trade shows, whenever I have gone around and talked with different vendors there and thought, you know, this is something that I might want to do and you might want to consider me, and I get their card, I will, on the back, jot down as after I've left their booth to say, okay, this was the person I talked with, but we were discussing this and that, and here's how many shows they do. You know, I ask them just some general questions, and I'll jot these things down. So when I follow up with them is to say that, you know, it was a pleasure meeting you, and just to confirm, you know, that you've got X number of shows you're doing in the U.S. or whatever. And the same thing, I think, would be an idea then with people that you're meeting on a regular basis to kind of get back with them and to kind of file those cards. But do you put those into some sort of a contact database?
They go into my Outlook, and they're filed according to the – I know where they are. I know what city they're in, and I've got them filed by sometimes corporate, sometimes it might be church, might be an organization.
Right.
And then I try to create – a contact list, maybe for a state or for a city or for an area. Like I've got one for Houston.
Okay, I know that David Heyer, for an example, you know, will call 3 or 4 people a day, and he'll try to arrange a luncheon or something with people. And I think it's important to make contact with these people. When I was in the in journalism business and the newspaper, I remember people saying that journalists would say that you should take me out. You know, if you want some publicity, you want something from me, then you need to give me something. You know,
right.
And I'm not talking about, you know, payola. I'm just saying that, you know, buy my lunch or, you know, take me out or give me your time at least, you know, rather than all the time trying to feed me something for publicity. Let's just have a chat. And, of course, people like to help friends. And I think that that's what, you know, again, what David's doing is just saying, hey, that, you know, what's happening in your family, what's happening at your church or whatever. And, you know, you get to have a good conversation. So I'm sure you do the same
thing.
Yeah,
and I think the phrase is value added. I've got to help them understand the value mm-hmm. I can add to whatever they're doing.
That's exactly
so
right.
this summer at the fair.
But also differentiate you from just the common magician.
That's right. Know? Last summer at the fair, my stage was sponsored by America's Window. And I didn't know that till I got there, but they had an exhibit.
What's America's Window?
It's just a company. And
oh, okay.
It's a national company, but they sell windows.
Oh, okay.
So I go there and my stage says sponsored by America's Window. And so they had a booth in the hall right next door. So I went over there and thanked them and took a picture with them and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this year I found myself wondering if they were going to be my sponsor again, because if they were, I decided I'm going to borrow one of their windows and I'm going to do card on the window or card through
the window
kind
right,
of thing.
Right.
And as it turned out, they weren't, but they were there.
Yeah.
And I went by and talked to them, showed them the trick.
Yeah.
And said, I could do that trick right here in your booth.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, and you've seen my show. I could do that trick where I made that girl disappear. I can do that trick right there in your booth. I can't sell any windows for you, but I can sure stop people.
Stop traffic. And they're going, what's going on over
and
there?
And so that kind of thing. So, met the guy that's in charge. And who knows whether it'll go anywhere or not. But that's the kind of thing. I'm always thinking, looking, talking.
Right.
How can I help you? How can what I do help you?
That's the value added.
That's the value added piece, because like you said, there's a lot of great magicians out there and doing stuff. And
that's another thing, you know, that I had learned a long time ago. And that is that when you're sending a letter out to a client, there should be more yous than me and I. You know, there's something that I can do for you. You know, what is it that you're doing, or that, you know, your event, or, you know, complimenting you for doing such a great job and putting this together, rather than, you know, if I or me is used in that pronoun sense, that it's what I can do to help you to make your job easier,
that's
you know,
right.
kind of a
that's
thing.
Right.
So be conscientious on
and
that.
And the more you can figure out what their need is
mm-hmm.
and then show them a way that you can help, meet that need.
Right.
Then that's the win-win. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what a magician should be, is a problem solver and the most easy, flexible person to get along with. You know, whenever that you're, particularly, I would think when you're carrying in big illusions and stuff, that you're gonna, you know, have to say, well, I need to have the stage, or I need to have people, you know, to help me or load in, and they're thinking, oh, it's gonna be a hassle. Let's go with just somebody else. I've got a smaller show I can do too. You
know, I want to make sure they know I will tailor what I do to their purposes, their venue, their time framework. I don't have a stock show. I have a lot of stuff, and I have 50 years of experience, and I will bring all of that to bear on your setting.
Mm-hmm. Your, customized your purpose, just for
that's
you.
Right. Be customized, just the message. You let me know, and I'll put all that to work for you in the same way that I did for so-and-so. Or
right. Now, when you're working like at a state fair, are you mentioned earlier you're sponsored, let's say, like by American Window or something, that do you incorporate the message or something of the sponsor, or do you use their name or just have it in the background and don't talk about it, or how do you?
This year I had no sponsor. My stage was not sponsored.
So you're paid for by the
fair, or
the fair.
It's just, you know, they provide the entertainment. But last year, all there was a sign on the stage that had America's Window, and I just thanked them from time to time to, you know, want to say thank you to America's Window for sponsoring my show. They've got a booth right over here. Hope you'll stop by, check them out if you need some windows. But I didn't. The fair shows have to be entertainment oriented. They just have to be.
Yeah, you don't want to be a hard sell. It's not like a trade show.
And you got too much going on. That's ambient noise and people coming and going. And your routines have to be tight. And you just can't.
Well, that's the thing. You have to stop in the traffic. Actually, kind of like a trade show, I would think, because in that case, people are not walking into like a tent.
They're not
to
coming,
watch you.
And they're not really coming to see me. They're coming to the fair and they see me. And a lot of times they're on their way to a concert that they paid $45 for a ticket to. So they may stop. I don't care what you're doing. They can't stay.
So
you can't take it personally.
So how do you select your tricks for an audience like that?
What I do with the fair, it's supposed to be a 30-minute show.
Okay.
I try to do something up front that's very, it's eye candy. It's got music, and it's got a lot of stuff going on. And so that's how I open. Then I always try to do a couple of big tricks, what we would call, you know, stage illusions.
Right.
I try to do an audience participation piece. This year I had two. I had one that involved a young lady from the audience, but it was done to music. So I got her up there and we did this thing together. So that's fun. And then I had a kid spot, the trick that I taught tonight in the lecture that you saw with the napkins. And that becomes a fun piece. And then I close with a big, big something that's done to music. But I use a lot of music. I try to keep the patter tight. And you just can't, you can't fool. I mean, I have great stage, I have great sound, but you got a lot going on besides what you're doing.
There is. And
people are coming and going, and you just have to understand that you got people sitting there watching you too, though.
Well, you know, one of the first jobs I had, I guess, was working like in a shopping mall in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I felt like I was a babysitter, and almost literally was, from the standpoint, you know, the parents say, I'm going to go shopping, you go watch The Magician.
Right.
And they just watch a show, and they, you know, show after show, and they were waiting for your next show. As opposed to the fair, you know, that is a family thing, and the parents are probably there with their kids. They don't leave kids. They don't want to lose them, I'm sure. So.
In our fair, we have probably the nicest fair venue in the nation. It's almost like being in a conference center. It's air conditioned, big stage, nice curtains. I mean, it's a little bit of wing space. And so it's not, I've talked to other fair performers and they say, this is a Taj Mahal. I mean, this is, so there's that. That's nice. But it's also, the show has to be big. It's a huge stage. It's a huge, you know, you might have 400 or 500 people sitting out there watching.
Right.
And, but it has to move. It has to move. And so you've got to mix it up pretty good. But I just use a lot of music. I use music if I'm going in the audience to get a spectator. I've got music in all the cracks. So there's never any real lull time.
Right.
And then I try to mix up the magic so that it's not, I want to make sure people watching know he's not just a kiddie magician.
Right.
He's done.
He's family. So you use adults as well as children and whatnot.
And you try to have, I mean, in my introduction this year, we mentioned the fact that I was on Penn and Teller, you know, all those kind of things. So they kind of go, oh, okay, this guy must be, you know, must know what he's doing. And you try to show them, you try to have fun, but you try to show them, I know what I'm doing.
Right. Right. Now, in contacting them, I mean, when you did your first fair, were you doing a county fair or state fair, or you went right straight to
it's funny because the only fair I've ever really done is the Kentucky State Fair, and I probably worked it 7 or 8 times.
So you haven't really tried to push to go travel the nation.
And part of that's because I work part-time, as you know, at my church, and so I couldn't do too many things like that because this was the Kentucky State Fair is an 11-day, 33-show run.
Mercy.
But see, I'm staying at home. I mean, I'm at home.
Yeah.
And I can get away. I'm part-time, but I can't go do that too many times.
Sure.
So that's a piece. But the way I ended up at the Kentucky State Fair was the agency that books all of the talent is a local agency, and I've known those folks. They've known me. I mean, I've been in Louisville for 50 years.
Yeah.
And so eventually they said, hey, would you like to work the fair?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, sure. And so I've worked the fair probably 6 or 7 times on 3 different stages. They've got a kids, they don't have it anymore, but they used to have a kids stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more of a kids, you know, you do more kids stuff,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I've done that a couple of times. And then this big stage, what they call the family stage, that was what I was on this year and last year. And that's kind of a big, big showcase. And then a couple of years ago, they created a third stage called the North Lobby Stage, which is surrounded. It sits out in the middle of the lobby. People sit in front to watch, but there's people walking all around you. There's no curtain or anything.
So you got to manage your tricks so that way.
That's
you can
right.
Do it surrounded.
And there's no dressing. You know, you've got to come in. Kind of everything's got to be.
You ever doing mentalism?
A little bit.
I was going to say, sometimes that could be dry.
But it just takes too long. A lot of times.
And
you've got to keep it moving.
And that's the thing, again, it's almost like a trade show because that you've got to be able to stop the crowd and to have them watch you. And you can't be in the middle of a routine because people are going to say, what's he doing? Well, I don't care.
That's right.
On.
If there's too much talking.
Yeah.
But like that, I really liked that North Lobby stage. The family stage is the best because you can leave your stuff and you can set your stuff up and you can push it behind the wings and mm-hmm. just pull it out. But the North Lobby stage, there's more traffic.
Okay.
So a lot of people see you. They're not coming to see you, but they walk through and they see you.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a dance floor. It was a smaller stage, but they had a dance floor in front of
right
it.
Right in front of the stage.
And so I played like the sub trunk, and then I played a trick called the Tube Illusion on that dance floor right out
right
in the middle
of them.
Yeah,
okay.
And they just loved it.
Yeah.
And it was very personal, very up close, and very magical.
Yeah.
But again, then you got to where's box. You know, when I'm done with this, how am I going to secure all this? Because it's sitting out in the middle of the North Lobby. It's got a little, you know, cordon thing around it,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not like.
So what do you do with it? I mean, you have some assistants to help you put it back up on stage?
Well, what I do with the sub trunk, I just roll it around to the back because they do have it kind of cordoned off, but it's not. And the beautiful thing about the sub trunk, put everything inside, put the top on, lock it,
right.
And it just looks like a box sitting there.
Right, right.
And the Tube Illusion is sort of the same way. I just pushed it up and covered it with a cloth and just sort of left it, and there's mm-hmm. not much people can do to it, but it's. You still kind of, there's things you could not do in that setting, but there's a couple of things like that you sure can do.
Right. Well, yeah, like a zigzag and some other.
You could
perhaps.
Do a zigzag.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a lot of illusions that you have?
I probably have about a dozen stage illusions.
You keep them in your garage? You got a warehouse? You got
I've got a big basement.
Oh,
and for
wow.
the longest time, it
walk
was
walk-in basement, right?
You walk out, drive out.
Okay, yeah, that's handy.
And when I first moved to Louisville, you know, like I was in an apartment, then we were in a condo, then we were in our first home. And little by little, I began to accumulate illusions. And all of a sudden, I had more stuff than I had room for. And I kept the sub trunk and I kept the zigzag. There were a couple that I was doing a lot that I did all the time. And I kept them at the house where I could get to them. But the rest of my stuff was stored at the home of our good friend, Dr. Bob Escher.
Oh, Bob's great.
And Bob was one of my best friends in magic. And Bob had a barn. And so I would stash my stuff in his barn. When I needed something different, I would go get it from the barn.
Yeah.
And then when we moved about 13 or 14 years ago, we moved out of Louisville proper to Shelby County, little town called Finchville, and we built a home. And I told my wife, only 2 things I want. I need a garage that's big enough for my van to come in and out of, and I need a walkout basement.
Uh-huh.
And I've got both those things, and there's I don't have, except for Azra, there's nothing I have that I can't practice in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough space down there, and it's all cased and all stored. And then when I get ready to load, I just drive around, go right out the walkout, right into the van, drive up the hill, and I'm gone.
Now, you've been in magic for a long time, and you are a creative guy as well. You're just not a performer and doing other people's routines and adding your own presentation, your own twist to things, because you've also invented some things. And so do you have like a workshop for some of the things that you build? Do you ever do your own illusions and
I'm
things,
not a builder. I'm the guy that keeps the handyman and the builder in business, because I'm the guy, if it costs $50 to pay somebody to fix it, I'll do $100 worth of damage trying myself. But I do have friends that manage some of that for me. And so occasionally if I need something done, I've got guys that know how to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then if I want something built, I go to the pros. I mean, Bill Schmelk's built some stuff for me, and George Kimmery built
Schmelk
with Wellington.
Oh, okay. Wellington. Sure, sure.
And then George Kimmery built most of my stuff. And
Is he still building?
He's not much.
I think he was.
Pretty much on the edge of retirement.
That's what I thought.
And then I've got a couple of Owen pieces that I just, you know, through the years have accumulated. Mm-hmm. And then I had a friend, when I first came to Louisville, I had a friend that was in school with me. And he came, his background was industrial shop and teaching and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'd like to build some magic for you. And I'm going, you know, thank you, but building magic's not like building furniture. And he said, no, what's something that you would really like to have that you either can't afford or whatever? So I had my heart set on a Lester Lake guillotine. And so he said, I'll find me some plans, find me something to look at, and I'll build one for you. So I'm going, oh, okay.
We'll see how it works out.
So we'll see how it works out. So I got him some plans and stuff. And then one day he called me and said, it's done. I want you to come. I'll meet, you know, come get it.
You had low expectations.
Scott, I could not believe it. I called George Kimmery and I said, George, you would not believe what's sitting in my living room right now. Uh-huh. And this is way before you could take a picture and email it and all that stuff. And I said, you've got to see this. Well, George saw it and he flipped out and he started selling them. My friend Doug made them and we sold 22 of them.
What's Doug's last name?
Russell.
Russell, okay.
And the company was called Crinkum Crankum. Mm-hmm. And Doug made, they were just gorgeous head choppers, gorgeous. And then Doug also made a broom suspension for me, which I still use, and really beefed it up. We looked at a lot of designs, and there were some problems, and I think we solved some of the problems with hookup and harness and stuff and made it safe, because that illusion can be dangerous if it's not built right.
That's true.
And then Doug built a couple other smaller things, but those were the two larger things that he built for me. And but I am not the builder guy. I'm not the guy.
That's a wise thing, you know. Yeah. Well, I've spoken about this with many other people, in which that a lot of magicians will try to do everything, because you do a little bit, but not enough really in each thing to be really proficient at it. Right. Plus, it's guns or butter. You're doing one or the other, you know.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, let's just say I could build.
Sure.
So I go to build a zigzag.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to build one zigzag
for you, right?
And I'm going to probably describe. Well, George Kimmery has built 50 zigzags.
Yeah.
What has he learned in the process?
Exactly.
A lot. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to know things about it that I may find out, but I'm not going to build another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so at some point, it's worth it to me. Like, I remember when I bought origami, I had wanted origami for the longest time, and I bought it from Bill. I bought it from Wellington. And as I understand it, that Bill and Johnny Gaughan, the only two people really supposed to be selling it.
Right.
And it was expensive, you know, but I got to know Bill in the process, and Bill said, yeah, there's guys building these things in their garages and everything, but here's what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And here's some things about yours. Like, this is never going to happen. That's never going to happen. I've thought about this. And he had worked with Jim, you know, Steinmeier.
Right.
And these guys are the pros.
Sure.
And so you get what you pay for.
Well, that's like what Walter Blaine had said about his ladder suspension, certainly, where that people have been ripping him off just based upon the videos they've seen. So, okay, well, it looks like this. And based upon his height, that it's this length or whatever, you know, and they'll build it. But that's one of the reasons he was trying to shut it down. Not only were they unauthorized and just ripoffs, but also someone can be injured. And if so, then they could say, well, that was Walter Blaney's levitation. And so he's responsible because, well, he had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, interesting story, because my friend Doug Russell, who's been dead now for several years, but the gentleman that built the broom suspension and the head chopper, he called me one day and he said, I'm out. Hmm. I said, what do you mean you're out? He said, well, I just got a call from somebody I built one of these broom suspensions for, and it broke.
Oh, boy.
And he said, I have no idea how they broke it, because it's, he said, but I know how you are. You take care of your stuff and you service your stuff.
Right.
And you, but he said, I'm out. He said, I'm bringing everything to you. You don't know who I am. You don't know where I am. And he brought me everything. He brought me the templates. He brought me a couple of unfinished ones. And he said, I'm done, for that very reason. He said, I don't want to get in a situation.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I trust you and I know you're going to be careful. But I don't know these guys that we're selling these things to.
Sure.
And somebody gets up there and tries to put a girl on that thing that weighs 150 pounds or whatever.
And it's only tested for 120.
That's right. Yeah. And he said, you know, I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Wow, hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that's a, there's a liability issue, you know, there as well. Well, speaking of illusions, the reason I was asking about creating, because when you were on Penn and Teller Foolish, you did an illusion, and who had built that? Explain what you did.
I did backstage, Dante's backstage. Mm-hmm. George Kimmery built it for me years ago, and George used to kind of laugh. He said, "You're going to have a whole show full of productions," because for there was a period of time there where every year I was hired by a shopping mall in Louisville to bring Santa Claus to town.
Sure.
So I do a magic show, and it end with a big trick, and
Book
bam, there's Santa
whatever,
Claus.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had a stack of boxes, and I had the backstage, and I had, you know, different. And so this was one that, and so I'd had it, and I don't use it a lot because, first of all, it's really big, and secondly, you got to have a bunch of folks. Mm-hmm. But it's a great, great trick. It's really good magic. And so when I had the opportunity to go on Penn and Teller, my friend Brent Braun, who works with Penguin Magic, he's the one that encouraged me to go on. He said, you know, there's two philosophies of going on. You can go on and try to fool them, which is going to be really hard to do, and nobody except the magicians are going to really care. Or go find a trick you like. Go do a good job, have fun with it, come away with 6 minutes of national television. I said, sign me up for that.
Yeah.
So I asked him, I said, what do you think about a big trick? And he said, I think they would love a big trick because they don't get a lot of them.
Usually just close up.
So I submitted a couple things, and so the backstage was what they decided on. And I knew, I told them from the beginning, I said, this is not going to fool them. They're going to, as soon as it opens the curtain, they're going to know what this trick is. Mm-hmm. So my goal was never to fool them. My goal was to surprise them. And I knew in order to do that, I had to have somebody really special coming out of that box at the end. Because I know they know it ain't going to be the girl that goes in. Mm-hmm. Well, my first choice was Matt King. I thought, Matt's my buddy. He'll do it. They love him. He'll be funny. It'll help him. It'll be great.
Right, right.
Matt said, no problem. I'll do it. That'd be great.
Funny.
2 weeks before we go out there, Matt calls and says, I got a problem, boss. I'm booked. I've messed up. I'm booked in Arizona the night we're supposed to tape this thing.
Yeah.
And I said, Mac, what am I, you know, I don't know anybody out there. What am I supposed to do? I couldn't use the host because she's standing out there. You can't load her.
Right.
So I'm thinking, so he said, let's think about it. Let's talk. We couldn't think of anybody. So I called my friend, Stephen Bargatsky, and I said, hey, what would you think about coming out and doing this and popping out? And you'd be, you know, they know who you are and it'd be funny and it'd be fun to do it with you. And he said, man, I can't do it. He said, get Moxie. Penn's daughter, have Mac set it up. And I went, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And so that's how that all came about. And when she popped out of that box, if you saw it, look on Penn's face. I told Mike Close, I texted Mike Close right before it started. I said, make sure they've got a camera on Penn. And they did, and they caught it. And it was just so much fun. And then my daughter was helping me. So it turned into kind of a fun, my daughter and his daughter. And we all just had a big time.
Yeah.
And they were surprised and everybody was happy. And who cared about fooling them? It became a magic moment for them.
Yes. Right. Right. That was something that he will remember because his daughter was involved for the first time on national TV.
And it's a great trick. It fooled everybody else.
Yeah. Right. Right.
You know, it fooled it's very magical.
It fooled the rest of the audience, but entertained Penn and Teller. Yeah. That's cool. You know, in getting on Penn and Teller Foolish, they did that show, of course, over in the UK. It was popular. It was one of the few shows that worked in the UK that has come over to the US and has legs and has had a few seasons. And in doing that, I know that Mike Close and Johnny Thompson are the guys who are really kind of behind it. And, of course, with your relationship with Lance and Mac and others, was it because of your contacts that you were able to get seen or to get on? I mean, the people often ask me, said, you know, I've got something I think that might fool Penn and Teller, you know, and well, here's who you need to call. I mean, how did this come about?
Brent Braun is the one that helped me.
Okay.
Brent has consulted some for the show.
Yeah.
And Brent was the one that said, you ought to go on. I said, oh, Brent, what would I do? I'd be too nervous. I wouldn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, no, you need to go. You could do this. And then one December, I got an email from him. He said, they're auditioning for the next season. Here's the talent coordinator. Tell him I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just took a deep breath and said, okay. And just sent them a couple of pieces.
Yeah.
And I don't know if knowing Brent, I didn't mention Lance or Mac or anybody.
Yeah.
I just said, here's what I like to do, guys. And neither one of them will fool them, but they both have a twist. I'd sent another trick, a zigzag that mm-hmm. I've got a twist with. And like I said, they chose backstage. And the Mac was going to help me, and then Lance loaned me his backdrop.
Yeah.
And of course, I got to see both of them while I was out there, but... they don't, I knew they wouldn't know who I was, and it was right. just, I think they just liked the trick. And Johnny was, both Johnny and Michael were very helpful. Good. Very encouraging.
Now, what about hauling the stuff out there? I mean, that's another reason I think that a lot of times people will do so, a card trick or cups and balls, because you can carry it on the plane.
But cost me a lot of money.
Okay.
They paid my expenses,
yeah.
but they didn't pay. You know, I had two assistants,
yeah.
and then I had a prop. It's the only big prop I have that I don't have properly cased.
Okay.
I just don't have flight cases for it. Mm-hmm. And so I had a buddy in my church that's been a friend for a long time, and he and one of his friends drove my van, loaded that thing up, drove it out there, 3 days out there, 2 days back,
wow.
4,000 something miles,
mm-hmm.
and I paid for their hotel, I paid for their meals.
Mm-hmm.
The Foolish was very good about giving them a room and helped out once we got there.
Yeah.
But that's how we did it. We just drove it out there, and I'll never forget when I got there, we met back in the loading dock, you know, and my friend Werner pulled my van up, got out, flipped me the keys, and said, "Here you go, big guy. I'm flying home." He was road done. He was done.
Yeah. Well, that was what I was wondering about, you know, as far as getting illusions out, because there have been a few other guys that have done illusions, but very few of them.
And a lot of them are in Vegas. They just,
oh, they're already there.
They're just, yeah, their stuff's
sure.
already there.
Couldn't you have done the same thing? I mean, just contacted
I could
somebody
have.
Locally?
And... Yeah, Mac actually has a backstage that Bill Smith built.
There you go.
I wanted, you know, I'm thinking, how am I going to rehearse that? I don't want to go out there for national television with a prop that I'm not familiar with.
Sure.
My girl's got to be able to do, you know what's going on. And I just didn't want to take a chance. There are, again, almost everything else I've got is cased and could
yeah.
go on a truck or go, but not that. That's the one thing.
See, I know some guys, for an example, who have traveled, who will say that they need livestock. And so they'll contact people in advance saying, "Hey, I need some doves. I need a rabbit," or, you know, whatever. And, of course, doves are going to be harder to work with. I know how Lance has, and others who are dove workers, have their favorite doves they work with.
That's
but
right.
I think it'd be hard to travel with them. But in some cases, if you're just needing a dove production without having to,
that's right.
you know, you can just borrow one, buy one. I mean,
that's right.
I remember some guy was in Chicago telling me, I think, that he had gone, like, to the... a pet store, I think, and bought a rabbit and said, "Hey, I can bring it back the next day." I said, "Nope, you know, we don't, once you get it, there's no returns on pets, you know, basically." It's like, yeah. so then he had to find someone to give it
just
to.
Just think how many goldfish Max bought through the years,
well,
here, there, and everywhere, you know. Are these the right ones? Just
yeah.
take them, let's go.
Yeah, that's, well, speaking of Mac, I want to talk about Mac and Lance and kind of being brought up, you know. Well, you know, like with the Long Beach Mystics and all these guys, you know, out in L.A. area, you know, kind of grew up and they kind of helped each other and taught each other magic and kind of went to the same meetings together and would share ideas. Was that kind of a similar but a smaller group that you had in Louisville?
I moved to Louisville in 1975 to go to school and quickly tried to find out who the magicians were and where the club met, and went to the Magic Club. And almost the first night I was there, I met two young boys. They were 15 years old,
mm-hmm.
Mac and Lance, and a lot of talent, a lot of dreams. And we were just friends. I mean, they came to the club. I came to the club. They did shows. We did shows. They came to my shows. I went to their shows. We just became friends.
Yeah.
And that friendship has just continued through
yeah.
the years. And I've been very proud of them, you know, watching their accomplishments.
Sure.
And then they have been unbelievably supportive of me and of our club.
Yeah.
I mean, they do.
And
they,
the city, too.
That's right. They help our club. They help our city. Mac was more than willing to, I mean, both of them have given me, like, when I wrote my book, the author, Roger Omundson, contacted Mac and Lance and said, "Would you guys contribute a trick to David's book?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lance emailed right back and said, "Could I write the foreword for the book?"
Yeah.
Let me think about that for like a nanosecond.
Let me think. Okay.
Yeah, and so, you know, that kind of thing. And then Lance loaned me his backdrop for the Penn and Teller thing. And,
yeah.
I mean, they've been like that. They both treated me royally when I've gone out to see their shows.
Mm-hmm.
And we are friends first and then fellow magicians.
Yeah.
And just very proud of both of them and thankful for their success. And looking forward to, at some point, they're both going to move back to Kentucky and we'll have a lot more time together.
Well, that's what they've talked about, you know, how they, you know, Lance wants to get back, I guess, to the farm.
Back on the farm.
Yep, exactly. And in that regard, then, also, when he does come back to Louisville, I mean, like at the IBM SAM convention this year, people were saying, you know, when they were with him, I mean, they were treated like royalty. I mean, because of what they do for the whole city and for different organizations and whatnot, you know, that the townsfolk just seem to come out, and that, you know, restaurants saying, you know, here's a great table or whatever. I mean, people are willing to help them too.
Well, they are local celeb. They're international stars of magic.
Yeah.
But they're just nice guys.
Nice guys, yeah.
And that goes a long way. I mean, sure. They treat everybody the same. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if you're somebody or if you're nobody.
Right.
They've got time to talk. They've got time for a picture. They'll sign.
Yeah.
And it's hard in ways that I don't think we realize. I mean, I remember Mac telling me and Lance telling me that they would go to a convention. I think the last time there was the international was in Louisville. Mm-hmm. And Mac said, you know, I can't walk through the dealer room. I can't get 5 feet before. And that's fine.
With people.
That's right.
Yeah.
But that's a different experience than what sure. you and I are having is we just kind of walk around. But they're so patient. They're so gracious. Mm-hmm. They just smile and sign and pose. And
yeah.
And not everybody's like that.
Right. No, that's true. I think I'd rather just kind of hide out, you know, rather than taking the time. But you got to stop it. And I'm thinking about other celebrities, you know, at certain levels, you know, in Hollywood or whatever, that they wouldn't be where they would without the fans.
That's right.
You know, who have made them who they are and coming to the shows. And these guys are very thankful. And they
That's
know
right.
where their bread was buttered.
And I tell you, somebody else who I saw that in, and I did not know him real personally, but he was always very kind to me, and that was Doug Henning.
Yeah.
And Doug, I got connected with Doug through David Ginn because mm-hmm. David and Doug were buddies. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Before Doug became, David and Doug
really?
Met at a convention and toured Europe together with backpacks and did all this stuff and
no
became
kidding.
Really close
wait
friends.
A minute, wait,
you got to get David to come talk about Doug sometime.
I did not know this story. I mean, I knew about Gene Anderson's connection and everything, but for Doug Henning and David Ginn, two completely different guys, and to imagine the two of them backpacking through Europe.
Unbelievable.
That is just an image.
So Doug's on tour with World of Magic back in the 70s, and I want to meet him, and I contact David, and David says, I don't know, you know, we'll see, but use my name.
Yeah.
So I sent a letter backstage and said, here's who I am. You know, we got mutual friend. Love what you do. Would be love to have the opportunity to just say hi if you've got time.
Yeah.
We're sitting in row 12, you know, seats, whatever, and forgot about it. Went, you know, sent that note backstage and then got to the theater, and the word was he's not seeing anybody. I mean, I sent my note backstage,
yeah.
but the guy said, don't hold your breath because he's just not seeing anybody. It was at the Taft Theater in Cincinnati. So after the show, we wait around, and finally they clear the theater, so we have to leave. So I said, let's just walk around backstage. Well, we walked around back to the back parking lot, and there's mm-hmm. just all kinds of people at the stage door, and,
sure.
and nothing's happening.
Right.
So we just stood there for a few minutes, and I'm just about ready to pack it in, and the guy comes to the door and goes, is there a David Gerard out here?
Wow.
Wow. I go,
right here.
Right here. And people are going like, who is this? You know? And he says, Mr. Henning would like to see you.
Wow.
And I pushed my way through the crowd with my friend and our wives, and we
yeah.
went backstage. And Doug could not have been nicer. He said, oh, you know David, and we've been friends, and, you know, just tell me about yourself. And the thing I'll remember, Scott, is at some point I said, could I get a picture with you and with my friends? He said, you come get in the picture. Let Debbie take the picture.
Yeah.
and so we got this nice picture. And then the next time I saw him, he said, if you got those pictures, I want to sign them for you.
Yeah.
And just that's how he was. And I'm a nobody. But he was nice to me, and he was as interested in me as I was in him.
That says a lot about the character of people who get to certain levels, you know. And I think a lot of guys who are well-known are nice guys generally, but they get to a point where you have to surround yourself with people to make it difficult to get to you. Otherwise,
right.
everyone's clawing at you, want a piece of you, and think they're your best friend, you know.
And you get pulled in a lot of directions, and you try to understand that, but I think as much as you can,
yeah.
you try to remember if it weren't for these people, I wouldn't
be here.
That's right. I wouldn't
right.
be here. I wouldn't be famous. I wouldn't have
right.
this job. I wouldn't have this. And the thing I always saw in Lance and Mac was just they were world-class magicians, but they were world-class people
mm-hmm.
is the way I kind of put it.
Right.
And Henny would be like that. I see that in David Blaine. I don't know him at all. But I've watched him. I
mm-hmm.
saw his show this summer, and I like him.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Seems
I don't do. I don't do geek magic and stuff. But I like him.
Okay.
And I don't know what it's like to be the rock star that you know thousands of people want to touch and you know meet
sure.
and everything. But I appreciate the somebody that tries to take time
mm-hmm.
for people.
Right.
and as a giving person. Lance and Mac are both very involved in all kinds of, you know,
Humane Society
and raising money for this and raising money for that, and lending their name to this. And and they both have been very, they've both given me nice kudos for tricks. They've given me nice kudos for products and for my flyers, and just, as you can tell, I'm grateful for their friendship.
Yes. I want to go in a different direction. Also, a question I've got, you mentioned the church a few times and working at the church. Do you do gospel magic and, I guess, member of the Fellowship of Christian Magicians and attend conventions, or what's your thought on gospel magic?
I'm not a member of the FCM. I performed this summer and lectured at the International Convention, and I will be at the Southeastern FCM meeting
in
November. It's in Nashville.
Nashville, okay.
But I'm not a member, and I do not like to think of myself as a gospel magician. I don't like to think of myself as a Christian magician. I'm a magician who is a Christian, but I'm not a, you know, I'm not even sure what that is.
Okay.
And so I use my magic to communicate in lots of different ways, but I'm not a huge fan of what I would call message magic. And by that, I don't mean using a story.
You mean like what Andre Cole does, like at the end of his
show?
Not
so much what Andre does. I like Andre, was a big influence, but I don't like, I'm not a big fan of doing a trick and talking about it at the same time, because I think you divide the attention between what you're saying and what you're doing. And when you do that, what you're doing almost always wins out over what you're saying. So two things happen and they're both bad. One is your message gets lost.
Okay.
Because you've got them distracted by doing something really cool. Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying just kind of gets lost. The other thing is, a lot of times a good trick just gets ruined, you know, because it kind of gets watered down a little bit too. And the thing I learned from Andre was, let the magic stand on its own and let the message stand on its own. Be real careful how you mix them.
Okay.
Yeah. And so most of the time what I do, especially in a faith-based setting, is I just use my magic to earn the right to speak. I try to go in, knock their socks off with 40 minutes of great magic, and then put it all down and take 5 minutes to say whatever I want to say.
Right.
Now, sometimes I'll have a trick that will illustrate, but even then I do the trick, sit it down, talk about it.
Okay.
And so a lot of times the magic becomes a springboard for what I want to say. And so, for example, a couple of years ago I spoke at a hospital. They had a symposium on truth-telling in medicine. You know, as a doctor, what do you tell patients? I mean, do you tell them everything?
Do you tell?
And so they had me come. The guy had a great idea. So I go do magic, and I talked about, I did my magic tricks, and I set them down. I said, you know, I'm not telling you how this is done. You don't believe half of what I'm saying, but you understand that. You know that. You know that I'm not telling you. You don't want to know, though.
Right.
Because you know the secret, that's right, is part of the whole magic experience. And so it's in your best interest that I don't tell you these things.
Sure.
And it's a little bit like that in this field of medicine. Now, you've got to be careful to decide kind of where those lines are, but I think most people, they may not want to know everything that you know about this particular disease, this particular situation, this particular set of circumstances.
Right.
But I say all that to say there's an example of how magic just kind of set that up. I didn't do a particular trick. It was the body of magic and the fact that as magicians, we're not telling the truth. I mean, we're telling you whatever we want to say.
That's right.
But you know it, and you're okay with it.
I'm going to lie to you.
It's the ground rules.
Beforehand. Yes,
that's right. I'm an honest deceptionist. And so so that's kind of how I go about communication with magic. I'll do something that either kind of earns me the right to speak or sets the stage. If I'm working for a bank, I might do a money trick.
Sure.
And just any kind of money trick, burn bill, whatever. And then after that, you can say anything you want to say about them, their products, their services, how they take care of your money.
Right, right. Well, I can see how you'd be influenced by Andre Cole from the standpoint that he's going to be doing a full show, and then he's going to say, okay, we're going to take an intermission. When we come back, I'm going to talk about a message from Christ and how he's entered life, and that we'll kind of go from there. If you want to stay, fine. If you don't, fine. You know.
And the beautiful thing about it is nobody leaves.
That's true.
Nobody. Yeah. Because he's earned their respect.
Right, right.
And so whether they agree or not, they don't want to miss the last trick, and they don't want to miss what he's doing. And so but he's not beating them over the head.
Right. You know, and the one trick he does, I think, with the balls.
And the
knitting needle or whatever, he kind of goes through
thing.
It's just the one trick.
That's right.
But it makes sense. And he does take time, I think, to kind of weave those together without you being misdirected by what he's saying, nor watching this, and you're not confused. But you're just saying
that's right. And there are a handful of tricks that works for, and that's one of them. Mm-hmm. He's worked on that. He's honed that.
Of course, yeah.
And I've got one or two things. I use the dizzy arrow. You know, the old dizzy
sure.
arrow.
Yeah, compass.
And that's a great mm-hmm. Is a great trick to talk about direction in life.
Yeah.
And you can kind of do that. It's not such a flashy trick that it's too distracting. And it fits perfectly.
Yeah, with the presentation.
And so you can kind of do that. But for the most part, I'm pretty careful about doing them at the same time. Most of the time I do, like I'll do a mirror, I'll do needle through the mirror, sit it down, and then say, you know, what do you see when you look in a mirror? You mm-hmm. see yourself. You like what you see?
Yeah.
It, like for self-esteem with sure. Girl Scouts or something, you
right.
know, I didn't. When I was a kid, I didn't like what I saw. Mm-hmm. This is what I saw. I saw skinny. I saw acne. And so the magic sets me up to that.
Right.
Because we've talked about it.
People can relate to that.
That's
then
right.
Also. And this, you know, I use the arrow trick then as well. In fact, that I was introducing Colonel Oliver North some years ago. I was in Vegas working at Caesars. And as I was introducing him, I had the arrows. And it made sense because I would have the arrow pointing upwards and saying, you know, our guest today is North, you know. And he's in San Antonio, which is, of course, down south. And that he works for Fox News, which is a kind of a right wing, you know. But some of you are more liberal and left wing thinking, you know, kind of
That's
moving
great.
It around like that. And so it just kind of worked perfect, you know,
yeah.
kind of a thing. So the important thing is to kind of find something that's going to work for the pattern. In other words, know what your presentation is going to be first and then put the trick in.
And the more important your message is,
yes.
like I can't think of, for me, a more important message than a faith message. I don't want that to get clouded.
Exactly.
That's right. I do not want to get lost.
So again, that's why I'm saying the message is first, the trick is second.
That's right.
So you don't buy a trick and then try to build a message around that, in my opinion.
My first thing is, what do I want to say?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do I want to mm-hmm. say? And then if the magic can help me say it, fine. If not, the magic will earn me the right to say it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You've been great. Before I go, I'm going to do one more thing, but
right.
let me share something that's made a big difference in my life and maybe can change yours as well.
Right.
And
so you're not
and
beating
you
over
remember,
the head.
That's right. And you got to remember the setting too. If you can only do so much, like at the state fair, I can't do anything faith-based.
I'm sure that not only that, but politics as well, in which they're going to say, you know, nothing political nor religious. It's a lot like your social media that you should, certain things
you've
that you avoid.
You've got to be smart.
Yeah.
You got to think about it, but that's kind of. I'm glad you asked that question because I think differently about that than a lot of my mm-hmm. my colleagues,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just not a huge fan of message magic as it typically gets presented and done. And the other thing, Scott, is if you work for children a lot, which I do,
mm-hmm.
they think concretely, and so any kind of symbolism is lost. Plus, kids' attention span is like nothing.
Yeah,
so if you're dividing their attention, they could care less what you're saying.
Right.
It's all about the trick.
Right. It's all flash and color and everything. Now, that depends upon the age also, you know.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's symbolism involved, it's like a foreign language. If they can't, their minds don't think that way a lot of times. And so if this represents this and this represents that, you're kind of spinning your wheels a lot of times. Sounds great and adults love it, but
that sometimes gets to be kind of tricky, again, like at a state fair where you are going to be having a wide age group and variety, everything from infants to, you know, old people in wheelchairs, you know, and you've got to be able to stop them and appeal to all of them and not just, to, you know, saying, oh, here's a kiddie magician or here's something the kids don't understand because it's too involved
right.
and esoteric. So you kind of have to have a good mix, and I think that'd be a difficult audience to work for. Day after day.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. but I like that challenge because I think I've got enough magic and enough experience to know what's going to be fun and entertaining for everyone. All ages are going to enjoy this.
Yeah.
And that's why it's called the family stage. There's not going to be anything offensive.
Yeah.
I've never had anybody come up to me after a show in any setting and say, it was great. I just wish, you know, if you could have just told a couple off-color stories or had a little bit more, you know. I have had people come up to me and say, thank you for not
saying
and
that.
Doing, and I've gotten jobs because I don't.
Yeah.
You know, I get the job because
they count
on me.
That's
I'm
right.
going to be clean.
Right.
I'm going to be wholesome.
I heard a great story once. That there was a fellow saying that he was at a men's meeting of some sort, and there was a guy saying, well, let me tell you a joke. He said, there aren't any women here, are there? There aren't any ladies present, are there? And the guy stood up and said, no, but there are some gentlemen present.
That's great.
You know, once the guy shut down, you know.
Yeah.
Nice retort.
And I have a couple of friends that I cannot recommend them. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not sure if I recommend you, yeah, that becomes a little bit of a reflection on me, and I'm sorry, I can't afford to.
That's right, because you want them to think good of you and to have you come back and do something then later, or
that's
make another
right
good recommendation or whatever.
That's
you
right
know? So yeah, it's your reputation.
That's a lose lose to me. I never have understood that, and I know there's settings where those kind of acts play, and that's fine.
Comedy clubs in certain
that's
places
right
and. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I'm not like, well, I'm prude or anything like that,
sure,
but at the same time, if it's a family show, I think you need to honor that, and that's kind of who I am. So it doesn't matter where I am, mm-hmm, that's who I'm going to be.
Yeah. And you have to be cautious what you're saying, and that would work in one setting, perhaps for an adult, but not for children or something. You know, I was working in a hospital recently for children, and there was a line that I normally say in an adult show, same trick, but just a different line, you know. It's like, you know, I don't want to let something slip out necessarily that's going to be, it's a double entendre that would could be considered rude for
right
children, you
right
know. I mean, it's nothing rude never at all, but it can be misconstrued for children. Because they'll say, "Mommy, what did that mean?" You
yeah
know,
that's right.
And so you got to, you know, kind of check yourself, saying, "Okay, what is it I'm going to say exactly here?" You know, for
right
that audience, could be again the same trick.
Right.
Well, you know, the name of my podcast, we'll start to wrap up over here, is called The Magic Word Podcast. So, David, I want to ask you that: what's important to you? What's your philosophy of life? It could be a sentence. You know, it doesn't have to be just a word, but just a.
Wow, philosophy of life. I
yeah
think my magic words that I use. I use these in faith settings. I probably don't use them in secular settings, mm-hmm, but my magic words are God made me, God loves me, and that's what makes me special.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that would be my philosophy of life is, you know, I just believe that God made me and that God loves me, and I want to live my life in a way that honors God.
Yeah.
And so that's everything. That's my magic. That's, you know, that's just who I am. That's kind of how I want to be.
That's great.
And just so grateful for magic that gives us the opportunity. Right before we did the Penn and Teller thing,
mm-hmm,
we all gathered in the under the stage, and Johnny Thompson came in and gave us the pep talk, the go get 'em guys. And here's what he said. He said, "We're the luckiest people in the world, guys." He said, "We have the greatest job in the world. We get to go do magic."
Yeah.
"And make people laugh and smile and have a great time." He said, "Go get 'em."
Wow.
And that's how I feel about magic. It's so much fun. And to be able to take something like a simple magic trick and see people smile, see people laugh, help people maybe forget about some of the cares and pressures and burdens that are, you know, just pressing in on them.
Sure.
Even for 30 minutes or for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Then if I can be a part of something like that, thank you.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Well, David, thank you. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you and get to know a little bit more intimately over here with some of your philosophy and thoughts and the different things that you've been involved with. Has been
well, thank you so much for putting me out there with my book and for
sure
the opportunity to lecture some and hopefully...
Out of a Hat. Is that the name of
it? Out
of
My Hat,
yeah,
written by the late Roger Omanson,
mm-hmm,
who unfortunately died before the book actually
published. Mm-hmm.
Was published, but...
Did some good stuff in
great
it.
Great job on it. Thank
yeah
you.
They say Lance and Mac recommend it.
Mac's in it, and Lance did the forward, so
yeah,
that's pretty good for starters.
That's right. And it is a full-length book in both paperback and hardback. And if people want to get a copy or they're interested in contacting you or whatever, what's your website?
My website is David Girard, G-A-R-R-A-R-D, DavidGirardMagic.com. When they go there, there's a separate tab that says book. They can mm-hmm go there and click on that and find out all about it. It's also available from Samuel Patrick Smith, SPS Magic. Sammy's
mm-hmm
the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And then supposedly it's out there in some dealers and people.
Okay, yeah, good. Good. Yep, good stuff. Well, again, thank you again, David. Appreciate it a lot. Thanks for being a guest here on the Magic Word Podcast. And so until next time, that was David Girard, and this is Scotty Out. Man, I don't know about you, but I just got that visual image of Doug Henning and David Ginn backpacking in Europe. first of all, of course, they were much younger at that age, but I wonder how their interests had crossed. I think there's an interesting story there that I'd like to talk with David about sometime to find out how he hooked up with Doug Henning. Wow, that sounds fascinating. I was not aware of that story, but maybe I'm one of the last people to know this. I don't know. But again, just trying to think about what that must have been like or what that looked like. Going back and seeing a couple guys, one from Georgia and one from Canada, hitchhiking. And I wonder back then if David Ginn had long hair the way that Doug Henning did. They both went their separate ways, but wow, fascinating. Interesting. Good stories there, Mr. Gerard. Thank you very much for sharing all those and for your thoughts as well. Wow, that was a lot of fun and thought-provoking as well. So I hope that the rest of you enjoyed it as much as I did. All right, well, it's time again for a few product reviews from products that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies, and you can purchase through your favorite magic dealer. And who is your favorite magic dealer? Come on, Peanut Gallery. It's the Magic Word Podcast. Go over and check out our magic store. We got them all over here. If you don't see it, I'm sure that we can order that for you. Just let me know what you need. But here are three different things that I took a look at this week that might interest you. First up is a product called Bear. This is B-A-R-E by the Other Brothers. It is manufactured by the Vanishing Ink Group. That's Joshua Jay and Andy Gladwin. Always have top-notch stuff. And the Other Brothers also are very clever, always have really good things as well. This is a great product and has a lot of versatility. Let me kind of basically tell you the effect, and that is the ashes on hand. That probably says it all. You get the general idea, basically, where that, you know, you have a name selected, a card selected, a sentence, a word, some numbers, whatever it is, and by rubbing some ash or something on the back of the person's hand or their arm or yours, then it will appear. It's always better, obviously, if it appears on the volunteer's hand, and that's the cool thing about this. There are a lot of cool things about this product, Bear, that I'm going to go into detail and talk a little bit about, but basically what you get here is nothing more than a special pen, and I say a special pen because this has a special solution within the Sharpie pen, which, by the way, it looks just like another innocuous Sharpie pen. So you want to differentiate this and set it aside from your other Sharpie pens so you don't get them mixed up. But the essential thing is that this has a fluid in there that when you write it on your hand, then you can transfer that solution to another person's hand, back of their hand, on their forearm, wherever that you engage them. So in the process, you're shaking hands with them, let's say with your right hand, that you apply the thing with your left hand, essentially. There are other ways of doing this, but it is a very cool effect and a cool little thing for, again, a variety of reasons. One of the things that I think is most important about this is that it does not leave any sticky substance nor residue. It wipes off easily. So whenever the spectator later has to, whenever they brush it off, it just comes off with the rest of it. But it stays there for a long time. Also, it's something that you can prepare and do early on your show whenever that you do the special something in order to get it to transfer over to them. Then you can do it later in the show. So it doesn't have to be right away. So it stays moist, if you will. Now, there are other ways of doing this, of course, with you can go into the bathroom, I guess, and get a bar of soap and get it wet and write it, or you can use chapstick. There are several other kinds of things, but it all takes a lot of time, and it's messy and greasy. This isn't, and it is a really cool thing. It's very easy. The routines that the Other Brothers give you are really great. Now, one of the reasons I'm talking about this now is because we're getting into the Halloween season, which many of us are doing seances, and it has great applications for seances, for living or dead tests. One of the ideas they talk about is where that you can write a sentence around your Ouija board, and then whenever that you apply salt around the circle as you normally would in order to keep the evil spirits out of the circle, then when you blow away the salt, then it will reveal the sentence or the words or whatever that you had already previously written around the Ouija board. Or, of course, as I said, a living or dead test with another person, but the idea doesn't have to be ashes. In fact, that what they talk about is using fine ground pepper. So you can have a little can of pepper, or that if you're in a restaurant and do this kind of in an impromptu method that you can use something from a pepper packet. It's just that some peppers work better than others. Anyhow, you can do it with salt, depending upon the color of your skin, of the person it's being applied to. They have a lot of different ideas and things that you can do with this. It's a really cool trick. And I've always liked the ashes on hand. There's one that I've been having a lot of fun with recently called Double Cross. And if you're not familiar with Double Cross, it's a similar kind of a thing in which that you have an X that you draw on your hand. And then when you pick it off your hand, essentially, and it disappears, then you toss it onto their hands. When they open up their clenched fist, they open it up, and the X is now in a permanent ink marker on their hand that they'll have to go and wash and scrub off at a later time. But they can show people for the rest of the night and maybe even the next day, depending upon when they bathe. Anyhow, this double cross is a fantastic trick. Friends of mine are onto their second or third one because they use it so frequently. And when I have shown people this, it really should probably be a closer. I mean, it is just a freak out moment when something appears on someone else's hand and because it's been so long disassociated in time from when it was applied to the time that it was actually revealed that they forget completely about what happened. Again, all in presentation, but this is another one of those kinds of effects where something will appear on another person's body, and it's called Bare, B-A-R-E, and that's by the Other Brothers. Boy, highly recommended. Oh, one last thing that I will mention, by the way, with Bear is that it does not come with a DVD, but you do have online instructions. So there is an online video that you can watch that explains everything, explains the routines, tips and tricks and everything as well. It comes from the pack, ready to go immediately. If ever there was a beginner trick, this perhaps is it, something that requires no setup. Just carry the pen with you and some business cards or whatever else. It's pretty cool. Oh, another idea that they say perhaps is that you might, like in a living or dead test, burn the pieces of paper or whatever when you, then you'll have some ashes to use then for the effect. Again, this is called Bear by the Other Brothers. Next up is Telekinetic. This is by Diamond Jim Tyler, and Diamond Jim has a lot of really cool products that he sells that he has of his own creation. This is a DVD and a gimmick that comes with it, and let me just say that this is based upon the old acrobatic matchbox, and it's one of those effects that, I've been doing since the early 1980s, I believe, maybe late 70s, for a very long time. The basic effect goes back to the 50s, as I understand it, in which basically you have a matchbox, and you have an extended hand, and the matchbox moves and then stands up, and you can flip it over. It flips over by itself, and then the drawer comes out, and you can take out a match and hand it to him, and then you can hand everything out for inspection. It's a great trick, as Diamond Jim says, that he carried this around with him for years and years, but then he decided to get rid of the matchbox because he had a pocket management problem, as we all do. You know, you have to have the efficiency of pocket management to know what you need to carry around with you. So he was always having a deck of cards, so he decided to use his imagination and see how he could apply this to a deck of cards, which is what he did. So basically that you have a deck of cards you remove from your pocket, you remove the cards out of the box, and then you place the card box on your hand. The card box animates, moves across your hand, stands up, and the lid opens. There's nothing inside. And you can hand that out for examination if you want. There's no reason to. But he also has several other ideas on this DVD that include ideas with using a of course, matchboxes and matchbooks. I hadn't thought about a matchbook. That was a very clever idea. And even business cards. So that you can have a stack of business cards, and your personal business card comes rising out of a stack of cards that are wrapped in a rubber band. Hand that out, and you can hand them all out. In fact, if you want, there's really nothing to see. So it's a great idea, and even has an idea then with cigarette boxes, if you happen to be a smoker. The cigarette box animates, it moves across your hand, it stands up, and the box lid opens. And there's even an idea he has for animating one of the cigarettes to actually come up out of the box, and you take that out and hand that out as well. Very cool ideas. What I like about Diamond Jim is he is one of those creative guys who sells something that is not just a one-trick thing. In other words, if he has a gimmick that's going to be sold, he'll say, okay, well, this can do this and this and this and this. So if you don't like one idea, there might be something something else that triggers your imagination also that you find can fit inside your act. And so I think there are a lot of really good ideas. He has taken an old classic and restructured it and made it uniquely his. Very cool. I think you can make it yours as well. Also, not only do you get a DVD, but you get the thread work that you need. I've always, again, enjoyed the thread work. This is nothing that's going to be an elastic thread or anything, you know, like Yigal Masika's cells or anything, that kind of a thing. But it is the right kind of thread that you'll need, as well as he has a little gimmick, which is different from the original, from the acrobatic matchbox that I talked about earlier that I used to use. And his variation on how to anchor this thread is a brilliant idea. I wish I would have thought of, but I'm glad that he did. So at least I now have this in my repertoire as well. And so that's included along with that. You get the gimmick that anchors the thread as well as the thread and the DVD, all included in this packet called Telekinetic by Diamond Jim Tyler. Highly recommended. All right, our third and final product review that is up this week is called Double Take. This is from magicworld.co.uk. I have reviewed a few of their products over the past month or so, and although I haven't been really wild about their video quality, I will say that the content has always been very good, very interesting as far as the things they put together and they put out. I think they've got a fine line of quality products, and this is another one of them. This is an idea that is done by Jason Knowles, and again called Double Take. The effect is basically, oh golly, he's got two or three different ideas with this, but essentially a card will change into a bill. I remember many years ago at the 4F convention when I saw Henry Evans do this, and I was one of the first people in line to go and purchase one of these. Basically, you display a card, which you place underneath your foot, and then whenever that you lift your foot again, it has changed to a bill. Or vice versa, but usually that's changed the bill, and so it's or to a different card, and it is amazing. Well, this is one of those DIY projects, and everything that you need is included in the box you get. And when I'm talking about DIY, I mean this is all the way from soup to nuts. Everything that you get in here, it's amazing that as I'm kind of doing the unboxing over here, you get a label, which is actually a sticker, I should say. And depending upon the currency that you're using, or whether it's going to be U.S. currency or if it's going to be a euro or a pound banknote, just be sure to differentiate or to order the right one. In this case, of course, I've got the U.S. $5 bill. You're also going to be getting the elastic thread that is necessary for making this. You also receive 8 very small magnets with this. And then you get a link that will take you to the video that is online, as well as a PDF that has some additional ideas and some other things that you can download. And it's all there. And in the video, they do explain exactly how it is that you construct your project, and then they go into the routine. I would say that, again, Double Take is a pretty good idea, but basically, let me give you one of the ideas in which that you would open, or you have a card selected, and then you also show in your wallet, you've got, in this case, a $5 bill, you have the person openly hold the wallet, and then you have, again, a card selected, return to the deck, and then you say, okay, I'm going to find your card, go through it, you show, is this your card? No, it's not. Okay, well, you then place that card on the floor, face down, underneath your foot. Then you put the cards away in your back pocket and say, well, you know, that it's interesting. So you open up the wallet to show that the bill that was there that you had shown, the $5 bill, is now their selected card. Well, so what's underneath your foot as far as where's the bill? You lift that up to show that now that the card that you put underneath your foot is now the bill. You open it up and it really is. I mean, it is the way you construct this. Now you're going to be needing to double up. In other words, that's just going to cost you $10 to make this. I mean, you got a $5 gimmick and you put another $5 with it, but it's very, very cool. And you can handle it fairly freely. You can't pass it out, but you can handle this freely because of the magnets and everything that come with it. But then as kind of a kicker, then whenever that you say, but the card that you thought was underneath my foot and you open the deck or you fan out the deck of cards and their card that was the miscall card is now reversed inside the pack. It has kind of a Trinity type of an effect. And it's kind of, what? what kind of effects. Again, it's pretty cool. And Jason Knowles goes through the whole project, and the camera angle that's on his hands, you know, stays static, so you can see exactly what it is, how to make it. Very clear. The instructions are clean, and you understand how to make this whole thing. It's a very cool effect. Again, it's called Double Take, and it's available then from magicworld.co.uk, and I would recommend this also. It's, again, going to take a little bit of fiddling and making up, but I would say that if you like making stuff like I do, it's kind of fun to kind of put this stuff together, you will certainly enjoy this one. And again, it's called Double Take by Jason Knowles, and available from your favorite magic dealer, which is, of course, basically coming from Murphy's Magic Supplies that wholesales them to your favorite magic dealer. All of these products today are available, as I said, from your favorite magic dealer, including Bear from the Other Brothers, Telekinetic from Diamond Jim Tyler, and Double Take, which is from magicworld.co.uk. All of these are pretty cool, and some recommended items that you might want to consider putting into your repertoire, and you can check them out. You can go to the website here at themagicwordpodcast.com and click on the tab that says Magic Store, and you can order through here. And of course, that if you cannot join us as a friend of the Magic Word with any kind of a financial donation, either a pledge or a donation, one-time donation, then you can always help out by just buying something from the store. And we will appreciate that as well. All right, towards the beginning of this podcast, we had mentioned that David Girard was going to be giving us a prize that we can offer as a contest to the listeners of the Magic Word. And again, it's called Out of My Hat, which is a book. It's a hardcover book. Let me also mention that the value of this is $100. And it's a small run, which is why that it's expensive, but also because the material in it is, you can make your money back. I mean, there was just at least one idea I just recently did in a show, and I feel like I've gotten my money back out of this many times over because of the impact that it had on my audience. And I know there are two or three other ideas that I'm going to work on and kind of slip into my Christmas shows coming up here too. Again, it's called Out of My Hat, and it's by David Girard. So you can go to the podcast website, and you can click on the link, and you can go and visit his website and see more information about what all is included in that. But if you're interested in perhaps having a chance to win a free copy of this book when it becomes available, because it's in, he should have them available, I think, within the next week or two. So he will be able to mail that out directly to you. Now, I say this is available to everyone where legal. If it's not legal to enter contests in your state, then please don't, but or your country or wherever, because it is available worldwide. Domestic postage will be paid by David Girard, but if it's going to be on international postage, if it's going someplace outside of the U.S. or its Emirates, then there will be foreign shipping applied. And if you decide not to pay for that shipping after you're advised of how much it's going to cost, then we will go back and have another drawing and draw another name. So if you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, towards the bottom of this particular blog, there'll be a contest entry form where you just put in your name and your email address that will go into a spreadsheet automatically. And then there is a random name generator that we will have a drawing coming up soon. And if your name is drawn, then we'll contact you to get your physical address and we can mail that out to you. So again, that's compliments of David Girard. I mean, not only has he shared a lot of ideas and stuff with us on the podcast here, now he's willing to give a copy of his lecture notes in the hardback form. So please go over to the podcast website and enter the contest there. While you're there, of course, you can always click on the tab to find out more information about how you can join the Friends of the Magic Word, so that way that you can show your love for the podcast and also give us a little bit of money back as well, which would help towards defraying some of the production costs that we have. Because we're coming up on 400 episodes here of The Magic Word, and we've got hopefully going to have another 400 or more. I figure I could probably quit this at about 1,000. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. So listen, this has been kind of an extended episode, and I hope that you've enjoyed everything and you have learned some stuff, as well as got a few ideas on perhaps some products you might be interested in purchasing, as well as some ideas from David, and go and enter the contest. And good luck to you on that. And so until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember that we have the greatest job in the world. So go out and get them. This is Scotty out.